Hello. In this audio snippet, I believe it's important to go over some of the things we have already discussed before with additional detail. And I apologize for the redundancy, but it's important to repeat certain things and to add some details because it's important to have these ideas very clear in our heads and to be convinced of them, of the reality of them, in order to do what needs to be done to change the Constitution and change the system as a whole. So we've been talking about taxes. At times it doesn't seem like we are talking about taxes, but we are, because as we shared before, the payroll taxes that Americans nowadays have to pay are, for the most part, the result of the Great Depression. Had there been no Great Depression, none of these taxes that Polio Boy and others after him instituted would have ever happened. That's why we're kind of retracing our steps to the Great Depression to try to understand what triggered it and what would need to be changed in our economic system to prevent it ever happening again. And in that way, we prevent the need or the perception that we need to raise certain types of taxes to compensate for certain problems in the system. We have to fix the system so that no one will, years down the road, say, oh, we really do need to bring back the payroll tax, the Medicare, Medicaid, and all these things that have created so many problems. And hopefully in a future audio snippet, we'll also be talking briefly about the problems that Medicare and Medicaid have brought into the system, the finances behind medical care, and also the just the raw bureaucratic process and the distortions in medical decisions that are brought on by Medicare and Medicaid, but that'll be a subject for another day. So right now we'll continue talking about the stock market because that was the reason for the Great Depression, the stock market system, which needs to be radically changed. So we'll talk about that, and then hopefully, maybe not in this audio snippet, but in the next snippet, we will talk more about money supply and what types of policies should be placed in the new American Constitution regarding the money supply, so that the MCs, the members of the House of Commons in the new American Constitution, will know how to ensure that the capitalist system is functioning properly with a proper money supply. And if we have a properly functioning capitalist system, the taxes under a flat rate, as we have said, will be decreed in the new Constitution, will provide that system will provide through that flat tax enough, more than enough, for the government to function properly and for people to have the services that they need from the public sector and also be able to produce privately and secure their futures and their livelihoods. So we'll talk about the money supply later. So right now we're going to recap what some of the things we've said about the stock market. And we've been kind of focusing a little bit on Amazon, which is, in a sense, the poster boy of everything that is wrong with the stock market system. We'll just share a few more statistics on Amazon to kind of illustrate why we have to get rid of the stock market system as it is right now. If you go online and try to find a table showing the profits that Amazon has had year by year You will find, for example, that if you add up the profits between 2005 and 2014, that would be a period of 10 years, that the total profit for those 10 years, for an entire decade, for Amazon was $2.65 billion. That's an approximation, could be 2.7, 2.6. But the idea is that it's around that number, around $2.65 billion in total profit over a 10-year period. And that's it's a small number when you think about it, especially because of how big Amazon is and how much hype it has received over the years. You would think that they would be swimming in billions and billions of dollars like Apple and other companies. But no, it's just $2.65 billion. And before that, I couldn't find the statistics on their profits before 2005, but I know for sure that their first year of profit was around 2003, when they finally made a profit of $400 million or something like that. So and that before that, they did have a few years of profit, but they were mostly profit through book manipulation, moving numbers around to produce an artificial profit. And when they didn't have a small profit, they had losses. So I'm pretty certain that if we added up the quote profits from the founding of the company in 1994, or even from the first, from the IPO when Amazon became public in 1997, if we add up the profits from then up until 2004, the year before 2005, I would bet that the total is very close to zero, if not below zero. So if we just add up the profits from 2005 and 2014, I would basically say we have added up all the profits up until then that Amazon ever had. So in those 10 years, and if you include the first 10 years before 2005, over 20 years, the company only produced a total profit of around $2.65 billion. Yet slave driver Bezos at that time, at the end of 2014, was worth around $30 billion. So think about that. The guy who owns the company has profited, and remember, he was not a billionaire before he started Amazon. He was not a big billionaire, so this is not like inheritance money that he had. These $30 billion are basically the product of him having started Amazon. So he personally has profited, had by 2014 profited $30 billion from having Amazon. Yet the company only produced $2.65 billion in profit. How can that be? And somebody would say, oh, well, yeah, that's just virtual money. It's just money tied up in the stock. He owned a lot of Amazon stock that was overpriced and worth $30 billion in the market at that time. But it's just the value on paper, you could say, and it was not real wealth or real money. But I would say it was real wealth. Because he was able to, as he was, owning stock, and the stock rose in price, he would occasionally sell it off. And he, from what I understand, he did have this practice of selling off his stock on a periodic basis, he would sell the stock at the price of the stock at that time in the market, and get cash for it, And just to give you an idea of how much money he has cashed in, how much stock he has cashed in, currently his net worth, if I'm not mistaken, is around $200 billion. And he has sold around $27 billion of his stock. In other words, right now his net worth is $200 billion, but up until now, over the entire lifetime of Amazon, he has already sold off $27 billion worth of stock. In other words, stock that he gave to someone and someone gave him actual dollars back. So he has in his cash account, you could say, accrued $27 billion from the stockholders who were willing to take that stock out of his hands, off of his hands. And that means that it's like a 13 to 14% ratio between his current net worth and the amount of stock that he sold. So if we more or less take that proportion, because I wasn't able to find the exact statistics on how much stock he had sold by 2014, but I have read that it's been kind of a consistent, he's been selling stock at a consistent pace. So if we assume the same percentage of 14% back in 2014, if he had $30 billion at that time, we could more or less make an educated guess that he must have sold off by that time already 14% of that of 30 billion, which is around roughly $4 billion of stock. So that would mean that in 2014, he had already pocketed $4 billion in cash from Amazon's selling Amazon stock, when the company itself, the whole company, the entire company, the entire behemoth had only accumulated $2.65 billion in profit. And I hope that this is kind of sticking or making sense how distorted that is. Because if you own a business and the business is profitable, you take money out of that business and you then buy yourself a car, buy yourself a house or whatever, but it's only a percentage of what you can take out as profit from this profitable business. But the whole company was worth, had only produced $2.65 billion in profit fruit, shall we say, but he personally had already been able to pocket around $4 billion in cash. And so that money clearly is not coming from the company. He's not planting a tree and then eating off of the fruit. What he's doing is he plants the tree and then he sells pieces of paper claiming ownership to the fruit and the tree. And the price of that piece of paper is independent of the tree. So when he pockets $27 billion, which he has already done in stock from owning Amazon, he's not getting that money from Amazon. He's getting it from a stockholder. So a buyer of Amazon gives around $3,000, I believe, for the price of one stock. He is basically financing Bezos. He's not giving those $3,000 to Amazon so that they can, set up a new processing plant or anything like that. He's giving the $3,000 to Bezos so that Bezos can buy himself whatever he wants with those $3,000. So as you can see, the stock market creates this perverse diversion of resources where you think that you're investing, but you're really not investing. You're just giving it, you're giving your money away to another person that has nothing to do with the business itself other than owning a piece of paper with the name of that business. So I hope that makes sense. And another thing that's very important to remember is that in its 27 years and 24 years of being public, a publicly traded company, Amazon has never given 1 cent of dividends to any of its stockholders. So the stock itself may cost $3,000. If you want to go get an Amazon stock, you have to shell out $3,000 and then you'll get your treasured piece of paper that says Amazon and you own Amazon stock. But if you own it, the only way for you to profit from having that piece of paper, in other words, from having a real profit, tangible profit, is if you sell it off to the next sucker who's willing to pay more than what you pay to get that stock, because there's I think hell will freeze over before you will be able to get any real dividend from Amazon, because Amazon is just reinvesting its own profits and the stockholders are being left in the dark. Imagine investing in a company for 27 years or 24 years, because Amazon has only been around publicly traded since 1997, if I'm not mistaken. So from then till the time of this recording, it's 24 years. Imagine owning a business for 24 years and still not get 1 cent of dividend from that investment. I mean, how many people would be stupid enough to invest in a company for 24 years and have the company rise and become bigger and bigger and not have 1 cent to show for it? So that tells you that there's something very sinister. It's a sinister transfer of wealth. We are the stock market people who are involved there, who are buying Amazon stock, are making Bezos richer and richer and richer. The more they are willing to shell out money for the stock, the more Bezos has in personal wealth. And that money is not coming from Amazon, because even he's not getting a single cent of dividend from Amazon. All his wealth is coming from the suckers who are buying the Amazon stock at such a high price. And then he can sell it off and use that cash to do whatever he wants. And also he can use that stock as a negotiating tool to buy another company. And that company will accept the stock as if it were cash. So we all of us collectively as a society are making Bezos richer by enabling this stock market system. It's a very sinister transfer of wealth from the poor to the rich, and the Democrats are always complaining about the rich getting richer and the poor getting poorer, and they don't realize that the stock market system, which they silently support because the vast majority of the stock market people are Democrats, they are silent about that. When it's probably the greatest drainer of resources in our economy and the greatest source of transfer of wealth from the less wealthy to the wealthier. So another important statistic is that the current Amazon valuation is around $1.6 trillion. In other words, if you add up the value of all the stock, Amazon stock out there at its current price, you get a total of around $1.6 trillion. And if you add up all the profits from 2005 up until now, and as I said, mentioned earlier, any profit before 2005 is more or less negligible. So if we just focus from 2005 to 2021, the time of this recording, the total profit of Amazon has been around $52 billion. And that's despite the fact that it has taken off. If you take out the profits from the last 3 years, that $52 billion goes down significantly. I believe it just it goes down to, if I'm not mistaken, to around $9 billion. That's how sad it is, and it's been like a $42 billion profit in the last 3 years, from 2018, 2019, and 2020. So even if we take these three bonanza years into that, it only adds up to $52 billion compared to the valuation of $1.6 trillion. That means that's less than 3%. Think about the dimension of that. The company has been around for 24 years, publicly traded. And in 24 years, it has only amassed a total of 3% in profit in proportion to what the market perceives to be its value. So you would suspect that the valuation is a little bit high, not realistic. But let's assume it's realistic. If it's realistic, then Amazon has only produced 3% of total profit over 24 years. That's like putting money into an investment. Let's say you put $100, and then you wait 24 years, and the $100 have now become $103 after 20 years. Think about that. That's how productive and profitable Amazon has been. And that means that that the company is generating around, if you do the numbers, around $3.30 of yearly profit for every $3,000 of stock. That's the proportion of profit that this behemoth is making. And even so, even with the paltry profits, on top of that, no stockholder has ever seen 1 cent of benefit from owning the stock. And all of this kind of reflects what I would call the sponge philosophy with which Amazon has been built up over the years. Many of you may have heard about the sweatshop atmosphere in many of the Amazon processing places, where people are penalized if they take too many bathroom breaks and so forth. So Bezos, that's why I keep referring to him as the slave driver, because that has been his mentality, to squeeze as much out of people and things as he can, and with very little expectation of reward or recompense. He also did I don't know how he pulled it off, but he was able to convince the U.S. Postal Service to basically subsidize a portion of the delivery of Amazon items. So Amazon is, or the U.S. Postal Service is basically delivering Amazon items below cost. So in a sense, the U.S. Postal Service is also silently contributing to the wealth of Bezos and the reputation of the company by subsidizing deliveries. And also we have, as we said, the stockholders propping up each other to keep the stock up. That's the only way that Amazon's stock price can stay up, is by one stockholder saying, hey, I'm going to take that stock out of your hands by giving you more than what you paid for it. He owns that stock, and then someone else comes and says, oh yeah, I'll do that for you too. So the stockholders have been giving each other more and more money, all in an effort to keep the price of the stock up. And Amazon has not done a thing. So Amazon has been built on this sponge philosophy, trying to get as much out of people as possible without giving back. And in 2015, Amazon's profits finally took off. And if you add up the profits from 2015 up until 2020, that you get around $49 trillion. And it's believed that the rise in profits began with a decision that was made by one of the higher-ups in Amazon, and I believe it was not Bezos, who decided to increase the subscription for Amazon Prime by $20 per year. And that was done at the beginning of 2015. So in other words, people were already subscribed to their Amazon Prime service, which I think allows for free delivery And they were able to provide free delivery because the U.S. Postal Service was partially subsidizing that delivery. But they were losing money in the process, and somebody decided in Amazon, hey, we have to increase the subscription price. And the subscription was increased by $20. And if I'm not mistaken, it was just increased with no benefit given back to the subscriber. So the subscriber just knew he would have to pay $20 more per year, but they had already kind of become accustomed to the service, and they committed to that, and that's when that increase was what was part of the increase in profits in Amazon. And then by luck, if you could say, then came the boom years in the economy during the first 3 years of Trump, when the economy took off. And Amazon, along with other companies, just went along for the ride, and that's when their profits began to increase even more and more. And then 2020 hit with the pandemic, and with the pandemic, then people were too afraid or were being coerced to shop online, and that meant that it was more expensive or physically impossible to shop physically, and they had to commit to shopping online, and that's when Amazon took off even more. Not because they were providing a good service, but because either through fear or other factors, shopping physically became more expensive, and they benefited from that. So I would say these large profits have not been the result of Amazon doing it right. It's just things happening that have coincided to help Amazon become more, quote, profitable. And even so, it's still unwilling to shell out 1 cent of dividend. And the important thing from all of this is that basically, Amazon has been kind of like a self-feeding machine with low profits, a very low profit margin, and just feeding on itself and taking advantage of as many people as possible, feeding into the system. So I would dare say that it at the end of the day, it has drained more resources out of the economy than it has really produced. And the fact that it lost money for so many years before it finally made a profit is just another indicator of something wrong with the company itself. And a company that does things at a loss is silently draining the economy of resources. A company that's not profitable and that relies on others financing their inefficiency or their losses is taking more out of the economy than what it's given, giving back. And that's been the problem with Amazon. And Amazon has been able to do this because of the stock market system that has artificially propped up its value. Because if we were living in a different system where they could not rely on the stock market system to have a higher value, Amazon would either have already gone bankrupt, or it would have morphed into a more efficient machine, because everything that Amazon does can be done by other companies just as well. Amazon is not adding any value. Because it is more of a sponge that is taking advantage of a certain position and doing certain things to sponge off of the economy. It is not adding something innovative, something different, productive to the economy. Anything that Amazon has done could have been done by other companies and maybe even more efficiently. But all of this has been allowed by the stock market system that is basically creating a side economy that is only tangentially related to the real economy, where legitimate goods and services are being produced. We have this very strange situation where people are trading pieces of paper on the side while the real economy is going on. And there's a tangential connection between those pieces of paper and what's going on in the economy. But it is all based on perception. So the value of these pieces of paper are based on this fickle perception of what's going on with the real company and the real production process, and that perception can be easily manipulated or distorted by speculation. So imagine, for example, a world where you had a certain stock whose value given to it by society came from their belief that there was a certain deity that would destroy the world if the stock fell below a certain value. So let's imagine this world, and let's say that that one day the belief in the deity suddenly collapsed because its priesthood was, let's say, suddenly exposed as fake. Maybe they were doing some sort of magic trick using magnets, and that was their proof that the deity was real, and that's how they manipulated people into believing in this thing that this deity was real and was going to destroy the world. It told them that it was going to destroy the world if this stock fell below a certain value, and people fell for it, and they would just constantly trade the stock and try to keep it above a certain minimum price. But let's say that the whole system collapsed, somebody found the magnets, it was just a magic trick, the deity was not real, so these priests were just a whole bunch of liars, and then suddenly the stock price would, you know, naturally collapse, and the people who owned that stock at the moment of the collapse would be the big losers. Imagine a world like that. That's basically what we have with the stock market. It's the same thing. It's all perceptions. It's all illusions and smoke and mirrors. And what do you think about this? What do you think about that? And yes, people are looking at the real company and analyzing it and saying, okay, is it going up, going down? But think about it. With Amazon, it doesn't matter how well the company is doing, because the company is not giving you one red cent of dividend. So what's the point of analyzing Amazon and how great it is, when the only way you can profit from owning Amazon stock is if you find a sucker who will pay more for it than what you paid for it, and then have him wait for the dividend to finally come, before he sells it off to another sucker. It's a very, very imaginary world. And all of this makes the stock market very destructive against capitalism, because it's constantly draining resources towards this side economy, this sideshow stock trading that's going on, instead of allowing the resources to become real capital in real investments. So people are putting their money into this sideshow instead of putting it into a real plant, a real factory, a real business, a real restaurant. So that's the problem. And the Great Depression happened, as we shared before, because the American people were getting deep in debt. They were so excited about the stock prices going up and up and up and up in this pyramid scheme that they would go to the bank and say, "Oh, give me $1,000 and I'll pay you back," because they had heard of neighbors who had done the same thing and had profited big time. They had gone to the bank, borrowed $1,000, they bought stock and the stock would rise, then they would sell it off and have this big profit enough to pay back the loan and have something extra for themselves. So everybody got involved in this game, and eventually the bubble burst, because all of this was just illusion, just fake illusion. And then the economy was drained from all investment capital, because all that capital, all that borrowing that should have been done to start a business, to produce real goods and services, was being fed into the stock market monster. And when the stock market monster belched, then all that investment was gone. It was not gone. The money was not gone. The money was now in the pockets of very wealthy and cunning stock traders. So the money was theirs. It was just now in the pockets of these men. But it was drained out of the whole economic system. And as we shared before, capitalism is a system where basically you have the freedom to spend and invest and to build your own personal domain that aggregates resources. It uses economies of scale to make production of goods and services more efficiently. So capitalism depends on the ability to or the freedom to acquire capital to start businesses. So if you drain the ability to acquire capital, if you drain the credit system, then there is no capitalism. That's why the Great Depression happened. So I hope that you're seeing that the stock market is the very opposite of capitalism. It actually destroys it, and it's like a parasite that sticks to capitalism and leeches off of it on the side. And yes, it would seem to provide some sort of benefit, but we can get all the benefit without all the side effects by transforming the system. And the only benefit that comes from the stock market is in the initial price offering, or when a stock is offered for the first time, when the company releases stock for the first time, that's when people buy the stock, and that money goes into the company and it's real investment. Anything that happens after that, once the cat is out of the bag and it starts roaming around, then everything that happens after that is just loss, economically speaking. So that one small benefit at the beginning could be obtained without having all the other stuff. And in the new, and by the same token, another source of that has drained our economies over the years, especially like in the last 10, 20 years, has been this habit of house flipping, where people just buy a house, wait for the price to rise, and then sell it off. They had no interest. They're not buying the house to live in it. They're not buying the house to then, you know, renovate it and make it prettier and put new things and then rent it out or anything like that. They're just manipulating chips. That's all they're doing. And we said before that the Constitution should have a clause that makes it illegal to engage in or promote economic transactions that do not contribute to the production or distribution of goods and services. Because there are only two basic costs in any good and service: the cost of production and the cost of distributing once you have produced it. And if it doesn't contribute to any of that, if it doesn't add to the production process, or if it doesn't get the product closer to the final consumer, then it should be an illegal activity, an unconstitutional activity. When in the case of house flipping, there should be something said in the Constitution saying, if you buy a house, you have to own it for at least 6 months. And yes, you can sell it off within the 6 months, but you can sell it off at the same price or at a loss. And if not, you're stuck with it. And then other things could be added to make sure that only people who are willing to invest in the house or live in the house can really get involved in the buying process. Because when all these flippers are there buying like crazy vultures, what they're doing is artificially increasing demand. And by artificially increasing demand, they make the prices go higher. And then the person who will want to buy the house and live in it, the actual final consumer, has to suffer the consequences of this, all the higher prices created by this artificial demand that produced no benefit. These people increase the demand for the house because they were trying to sell it off later on. So house flipping should be explicitly banned in the Constitution. The stock market as it operates now should also be explicitly banned in the new Constitution, and it should be changed. And so those two, I believe, should be specifically mentioned in the new Constitution. But because this concept of an activity that doesn't promote production or distribution, that is like a very general concept, then the MCs will have the responsibility to be on the lookout for such activities and legislate accordingly. So if they see something similar to house flipping, but it's happening with other industries, then they are supposed to step in constitutionally to legislate and protect the economy from those types of transactions. But at least the stock market and house flipping should be there, because those two have contributed a lot to, made a lot of damage to the American economy. And as I we've mentioned before, in 2008, the bastard, the foreign bastard who was able to get into the White House got in because of the Great Recession that happened right before the election, coincidentally, in 2008, which was caused by a housing crisis, which was also fostered by other laws that were forcing banks to lend money to minorities and others under the threat of severe fees and penalties. And that's why banks started giving out all these unsafe loans to these people buying houses. And many of these people who were buying houses were also in the flipping business. And eventually the housing bubble burst, and then again, economic resources were drained from the investment pool. So then we got the Great Recession that was prolonged because of old bastard's idiotic policies. So house flipping and the stock markets, which led to the Great Depression and has led to so many other things, has also been a source of problem. So those two things should be clearly banned in the Constitution. And the stock market per se should not be banned. It should be the way it's operating now. And as we shared before, the solution would be that stocks should become like currency. In other words, if you buy $100 of stock, that's what it costs, $100. And if you sell it off, you can only sell it off as with the same price of $100. It's like, you know, giving away a $100 bill. So if somebody wants your stock, you will give the stock to him, and he will give you a $100 bill. And that way, then there is no sideshow of stock trading, where the price of the stock goes up or down and all this nonsense, because the price will always be the same. And you can buy the stock from the company. If you buy it from the company, you put the $100 directly into the company. That's real investment. And if someone else buys it from you, it's basically the equivalent of you selling the stock back to the company, and then the other guy buying the stock from the company. So just to avoid the middleman, you just give him your stock, and he gives you back the $100 you had already put into the company when you bought the stock from the company in the first place. And that's the only trading that would happen. And I believe that it should also be illegal, constitutionally speaking, to sell the stock at a lower price, because that's to avoid this whole speculation thing where, oh, I want to get rid of the stock, so I'm going to have to sell it off at $94. But the other guy who is buying it from you believes that the stock will recover eventually and get back to 100. So then if we allow the stock to be sold at a lower price, we again bring in that sideshow of trying to profit from the sale of the stock per se. You should profit from owning the stock through the dividends that the company gives you, not from selling the stock. $100 is $100. So now if a company becomes very popular because it's really productive and successful and people want to own that stock, then instead of getting it from you, they should go to the company and say, give me one of your stocks. Because they'll try to go to another stockholder and say, hey, give me your stock. And he'll say, no, I'll hold on to it because it's a very profitable company. So they will have to go to the company and say, give me more stocks. And so the company will then issue new stocks. And as they sell off these new popular stocks at $100 a piece, that all that money's coming directly into the company and can be used for investment to produce, you know, to start a new processing plant, to buy new equipment, to buy better machinery, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that would promote the investment process. And what happens then in the other scenario, if the company is tanking and not doing very well, and if you own that stock, you will probably want to get rid of it because the company's not doing well, and you'll go to your friend and say, hey, come on, I'll sell you the stock, or you put it up in the stock market, and no one wants to buy it. What happened then? Well, you're stuck with it. And that's what happens when you invest. When you invest, you put money into a restaurant, and if the restaurant doesn't do well, I'm sorry. I mean, that's just the way it is. And if this restaurant does well, then you profit from it. So just as you can profit, then you can also incur losses. And so that would just be part of life. All of this would allow or force people to think more long term. So they're not just doing what we mentioned before, what we can call investment fornication, in and out, you know, just buying the stock for a short while, then dumping it off to the next idiot who will buy it for a higher price. You are investing in a business. And if the business does not do well, then you're stuck with the stock. So therefore, you will think twice before buying that stock, because you know that once you buy it, you're more or less stuck with it if the business does not do well. And so people will think more long term. They will also ride the highs and lows of the business cycle. They won't panic as quickly because they're stuck with the stock. So they'll just ride out the highs and the lows. And they will not be susceptible, even if they wanted to rumors and any inside information that may cross their paths or anything like that, because it's their stock. They are investing in the company. It's a marriage, it's not a fornication situation. It's an actual marriage where you're committing to this company, and because you're committing to it, it also should be in the Constitution that. Companies should be forced to provide, publicly owned companies should be forced to provide a certain percentage, and not say, for example, 5% of dividends from their profits when they become profitable for the first time. So let's say a company has been around for 3 years. The first year lost, let's say, $100 million. The second year lost $50 million. So that's a total loss of $150. And then the third year, finally, they come out of it and they make $200 million in profits. And now they have a net profit over their lifetime of $50 million. Then over that $50 million, then the company should be obligated to give, to separate 5%. That'd be, in this case, $2.5 million, and give that out as dividend. So it's sort of a first fruits offering that the company's making. So, oh, we finally made a profit for the first time. Here you go, stockholders. You deserve it. Here's 5% of our profits to you, at least 5%. So it should be constitutional, a certain percentage, and I suggest 5%, if not 10%. And then from then on, it should also be required that a minimum of 1% be handed out in dividends every year. And taking into account losses in previous years when doing this calculation. So in other words, let's say after 3 years, we had the company making $200 million, but then let's say the fourth year, something went wrong and they lost $10 million, and the fifth year, they lost $5 million. So they lost $15 million over those 2 years. And then they bounce back and they make $30 million. So that means net profit of $15 million over those 3 years. So after 3 years, they're back in the black, and over that period, they made $15 million. Then at least 1% of $15 million should go out. So not 1% of the $30 million in the third year, because that'd be unfair to the company, because the company has to compensate for the 2 years of losses that came before that year of profit. So if you can compensate for the losses and still have a net profit, then 1% at least of that should go out in dividends. And that's to prevent the Bezos, the slave drivers of the world, sucking stockholders dry for 24 years without providing a single cent of dividend, which is, to me, is tantamount to a scam. It's almost like having someone being engaged to someone and saying, I'll marry you, I just need to finally get my act together and get a house and buy a car and this and that and the other, and have the other person wait for 24 years and they're still engaged and they still haven't gotten married. And that kind of amounts to a scam. It's just, it's a Ponzi scheme at the end of the day. And so these guaranteed dividends are to compensate for the inability to profit from the sale of the stocks per se. Because the stock market's allure is its high liquidity. You put in money and you can get it back very quickly. But that leads to investment fornication. A more long-term situation is needed, where you invest and you put the money and you can't profit from the sale of the stock. But to compensate for that, the Constitution should guarantee certain dividends. So you can't sell it off at a higher price. You can't profit from selling the stock, but at least the company, the public company, is required by constitutional law to give some dividend back whenever it becomes profitable. This is just a recap of what we were saying about the stock market and Bezos. And next we would want to talk about the banking system and how money supply works with relation to the banking system and how that needs to be altered. And hopefully we will offer a solution, which I think is going to be very radical. If some people hear it, they will find it appalling. But I believe that an idea like that, if not a similar idea, if not that exact idea, is needed to change the way the money supply works and to create a more efficient system. It does have a risk, but I believe I'm 95% sure that the risk is not worth worrying about. The benefit is going to be much higher, and it's going to free the economy from certain binds that it has had. But we can't really talk about that now. We've run out of time. This audio clip went for too long. So we apologize for repeating ourselves. But I think it's important to continue chipping away at this bronze statue that has been built in honor of the stock market and how it's been deceptively portrayed as the paragon of capitalism, when in fact it's a big drain of resources and a great root of destruction of the capitalist system. And the Constitution should reflect that. The MC should legislate in accordance, in awareness of that. And as we said before, it's important to inject economic principles into the Constitution. It's something that the Founding Fathers didn't do. They didn't even put in the right to property. As we've said before, you can be robbed blind and your constitutional rights are still not being violated, even if someone takes every cent from you. So if they couldn't even put that simple thought in, there was no chance in heaven or hell that they would put in anything deeper related to the economy. But these things have to be put in, because if not, then the MCs, or the members of Congress, are free to manipulate the economy and do all sorts of stupid things. And so we need very clear parameters so that the MCs will abide by them, and then taxation will flow from that framework in a very, very easy way, and we'll be protected from future attempts at introducing destructive taxes like the payroll taxes, and then taxes to fund Medicare, Medicaid, all these programs that have done a great deal more harm than good. So we'll talk about all those things in a future audio snippets. Thank you very much.